Sonny Stitt opening up on Blues Greasy. Bobby Timmons on piano, Edgar Willis on double bass, and Kenny Dennis on drums. This is from Stitt's 1957 album, Personal Appearance, the Sonny Stitt Quartet. It's one of my all-time favorites. This is Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lead. It is Monday, March the 30th, and it's a school days in Detroit as public schools, what's left of them, move one step closer to privatization. He succeeded at imposing an emergency manager in Detroit, forcing it into bankruptcy and usurping all local authority in order to pave the way for its comeback as a reimagined city, preferably for new Detroiters. Now, almost 5 months after the federal judge approved the city's onerous restructuring plan, Governor Rick Snyder takes aim at Detroit's public schools. In the same way that Kevin Orr, a partner in a politically connected private law firm, was given full decision-making authority over the city, a citizens group known as the Detroit Coalition for the Future of Detroit School Children is the stalking horse advisory group that Snyder will rely on to recommend what to do about Detroit's public schools. A big clue as to how this will turn out, none of the people actually elected to Detroit Public Schools, the Detroit Public Schools Board, which serves the largest school district in the state, none of them has been included. Elena Herrada, a self-described member in exile of the Detroit School Board and an activist with Detroiters Resisting Emergency Management, is here with us today, and she is going to be telling us about the state of affairs. Thank you, Elena, for being with us.
Thank you for having me. Thank you.
Well, this afternoon, a report is supposed to be handed up to the governor as a series of recommendations as to what to do with Detroit's public schools. And from there, the governor is supposed to take these so-called recommendations by this group, the Detroit Coalition for the Future of Detroit School Children, as the template upon which to make the next moves. What are you hearing about this report and this group, and what are your thoughts about where things are now?
Well, let me just make a couple of statements before we get started on that. Lamar Lemons, who's a member of the Detroit School Board, has been participating in the coalition meetings from the beginning. So Lamar is the only school board member who's a former legislator and came onto the school board to fight for the right to our governance once again. So he did a reversal of what most elected officials do. Most people use the uncompensated school board seat to move up to higher office because you have to get elected to the school board, and then, you know, you can get elected from there to the state legislature. And Lamar actually did the opposite of that, and he's been very, very active in fighting to restore governance and fighting against emergency management from the beginning. The coalition is a group of people that are there's a five-person co-chair group, and I want to just say who those are. I'll lay that out for you. The coalition is led by five co-chairs, Skillman Foundation and President, who Skillman is the force behind the privatization of the schools in Detroit. Tanya Allen, Representative Wendell Anthony from Fellowship Chapel, and the president of the NAACP. And I want to just clarify that Wendell Anthony was instrumental in helping to push the people of his congregation and of the NAACP into accepting the plan of adjustment, the bankruptcy. So he actually sided with the banks and was rewarded by the banks for helping to push the people of Detroit into bankruptcy and accepting the loss of their pensions. That's Wendell Anthony. Then there's NAACP. Okay, he's from the NAACP, the local chapter here. David Hecker, who's the president of AFT Michigan and AFL-CIO, and I want to state very, very emphatically that Hecker has never opposed the Educational Achievement Authority, the separate and unequal schools that were set up by Snyder by taking 15 schools out of Detroit Public Schools, but they have been instrumental in chasing dues wherever they might be found, whether they're charters or EAA, Jim Crow schools, or Detroit Public Schools. So the Michigan Federation of Teacher President Hecker is a member of that five-person body, which basically, by their existence, negates Detroiters' voting rights. Then following Hecker is John Ricolta, Jr., the CEO of Walbridge. They're the ones that get the contracts for the building. They build Walmart in Mexico. They build major, major building contractors, and they mostly built the schools once the bond passed. So John Ricolta is a co-chair of the Coalition for the Future of Detroit Children. And then Angie Reyes, the executive director of Detroit Hispanic Development Corporation, and she's the one that they sent to tell me that I wasn't welcome into the meeting when I went to the Skillman meeting last week as an elected board member. They told me that I was not allowed into the secret meeting, but they sent Angie Reyes from my own community to do that. So that's the five co-chairs. And then there's about 130 people all told on this coalition. There's a woman named Sloan Lightfoot from Ann Arbor School Board who wrote a letter resigning from the coalition and denouncing it for being nothing but Skillman and United Way's instrument to force expansion of the Educational Achievement Authority. And I'll be glad to send that link to anyone who wants to see that. This is really, really important to understand that the majority of the people on the coalition have some interest in getting contracts with Detroit Public Schools or have some connection to it, something that an elected board member could never do. We can't do that. And we're subject to the Open Meetings Act, which they are not. So they have millions of dollars to spend on convening this 145-person group of unelected people and then having them make recommendations. But following the time that they were to make recommendations, now keep in mind that the media in Detroit gives them legitimacy. So other than that, they have absolutely no, they just came out of nowhere. I mean, they're people like pastors and, you know, they're people of, they're civic leaders. But they were not elected to do anything, and they're not held to the Open Meetings Act. They're certainly not going to be held to any kind of responsibility. They don't make any kind of policy. They make recommendations to the governor. But before the recommendations came out today, which are supposed to be later on today, Snyder actually went ahead and took the 15 schools in the Educational Achievement Authority and created a separate department for them so that the poorest black children in the state of Michigan aren't even found under the Department of Education. They're in a new department called Technology and Budget. So if anyone doubts that there is a separate and unequal school district being set up in Michigan, it's not even under the Department of Education in the state of Michigan now. We're waiting to see if the State Department of Education, who are elected, are going to sue the governor for changing the structure of the Department of Education without any kind of a constitutional change. So but before I continue, I want to see if you have any questions.
I'm looking at the tactic by the governor here. In the same way that Kevin Orr, an African-American, was the face of the reimagining of Detroit,
right.
I mean, we discussed at length what that means, it seems as if this Skillman Foundation and the Detroit Coalition for the Future of Detroit Schoolchildren is predominantly non-white, and so it gives a patina to a rather insidious plan.
Right, right. Well, the article that I'm looking at that is kind of interesting from Michigan State, from the Lansing State Journal, it says, who will have Governor Snyder's ear, the coalition or Paul Pastorek? Well, Pastorek is he's from New Orleans. In that answer to Pastorek, he's the one who created that mess in New Orleans. and
where
they're bringing
there is
here
no public school anymore. New Orleans right. is now a totally charter school city. I commented about that in reference to Marc Morial, who was a former mayor of New Orleans, declaring that racism really is not the big problem now, it's income inequality. I want to ask about what do you suspect is afoot here? What is happening?
Can just come back to that statement for a second. So it's not racism, it's income inequality?
It's income inequality.
So does that presume that there's just as many poor white people and that they're treated exactly the same as poor black people?
Well,
is that
he's the guy who's head of one of the oldest and largest civil rights organizations, and he formally declared that racism is not the big issue, it's income inequality. But tell me what you
well,
think
they're in,
about...
Well, they're interchangeable.
Yes,
oh, never mind. I'm sorry.
We did this whole thing. But let me ask you, what do you think is afoot here with this report being handed up this afternoon, later this afternoon? What is happening to the schools?
Okay, the schools, what they're doing is an end run to do anything to avoid giving the right to govern back to the elected school board. So rather than bring in another emergency manager, because this would be the fourth one, now we have triple the debt that we had in only half of the number of schools. So there's almost nothing left of Detroit Public Schools.
Then, what has happened to them?
They closed them, they chartered them, they literally closed them so that they could close down certain areas where they didn't want the people in the neighborhood. There's empty buildings of schools everywhere. They're giving them away to real estate interests. The Detroit Day School for the Deaf was sold right out from under the students to Wayne State. Wayne State owns the property now. We're a beautiful building that had been the school for Detroit Day School for the Deaf. And they closed it and kicked the students out. And most of them don't have a school to go to now. The closest next deaf school is in Flint, an hour away. And deaf children aren't going to go boarding in another. I mean, it's then the other Davis Aerospace, the beautiful school that we had that had a plane and students could learn how to be pilots. They got their license. They were playing mechanics, the Davis Aerospace, and it was sponsored by the Tuskegee Airmen. They closed that building and gave it to the city. They sold the plane right out from under the students and pushed the students into another VOCTEC that doesn't have any curriculum for aerospace and never told the school board or the students or the parents. They just made that decision because they don't have to do anything. Nothing comes before the board.
So
this is the kind of chaos.
Would it be accurate to read from what you're saying that this report pretty much sets in motion the anticipated action by the governor to move the school system in Detroit to charters?
Yes, absolutely.
I read in the Detroit News an editorial that they wrote on they published on the 28th, and in part it says, quote, "For guidance of what the group has in mind, look to what the state did in Highland Park and Muskegon Heights, where emergency managers effectively converted the districts to charter school systems." This was an editorial that suggested that this coalition is doing the right thing, and it's a legitimate body. B, that they are undertaking a genuine reform effort here, and C, that there was under emergency management, a district would tend to fare better than leaving it to, you know, regular politics.
Well, let me tell you, Highland Park, the ACLU just lost a case in the Michigan Supreme Court, which stated that Highland Park does not have an obligation to educate children, to give an equitable education to children. So Highland Park lost that case. Highland Park has no schools. It's the Leona Group came in and chartered what was left of the public schools there. And they fly in on jets for their board meetings, and the people there are so, Highland Park is poor. And then Muskegon Heights, the charter operator there, left in the middle of the year and said, we're not making any money here. So they just left it. So the last schools in Muskegon Heights were chartered. Those are both black districts, obviously. They let a charter school come in, and then the charter left in the middle of the year because it wasn't making enough money. The buildings had been sold. I mean, there's such contempt for black people in Michigan. I don't know how to describe it. To say that there is no obligation of the state to educate a group of people and close their school and just walk away from it. Now, this is where the light rail is going in. There's beautiful houses there. They want black people out of Highland Park. They want poor people out of Highland Park. And they want to be able to just make that the new Detroit that's envisioned by Duggan and Snyder. It does not include poor black people.
You are elected to the board, and yet you are a member in exile. What does that mean?
We say that there's 11 board members in the Detroit Public Schools. The elected board, because we have no authority, we operate in exile. And we say this there's actually been quite a bit of discourse about the notion of exile, of being in exile when we're under a government where we have no authority. We have basically corporate government in Michigan. So to be in exile means that we do not accept emergency management. It means that we don't walk away from our elected seats. We meet. We give our notice as we're required to do under the Open Meetings Act, even though we have absolutely no money to spend, have no authority to let contracts, and more importantly, those who do have that authority are not subject to Open Meetings Act. That's why they couldn't remove us from their meetings where they're making decisions about our schools. And these are, so we're in exile. Now the flip of that is elected officials who comply with emergency management, we've referred to as being in captivity. So the city council operates in captivity. They do whatever the mayor and emergency manager want. They make no opposition. They do not defend the people from the pension thefts. They do not defend the people from the water shutoffs, from the foreclosures, from the school closings. They make absolutely no move, and they make good money. The thing that they did in the last couple months, in the last 2 weeks, they came to life and asked for a raise. So other than that, that's a group that's entirely complicit with the emergency manager, the Detroit City Council. It's a shameful, shameful body, and they actually collect a salary. So the Detroit School Board, which does not get paid, still operates in exile. We have members who are not with us, but they're not in the majority, and they don't really come to meetings. They just get to take trips that the emergency manager sends them on. They have a few little benefits.
Could you give an idea, Elena, of the impact that the public school system has absorbed in the last several years? What has happened to the public schools in Detroit over the last couple of years, especially with respect to bankruptcy?
Well, we were taken over in 1999, and the elected board was removed. Both of the takeovers, the one in 1999 and the one subsequently in 2009, where an emergency manager was imposed, both of those immediately followed bond initiatives where the people voted to increase the spending of Detroit schools to be able to make building improvements. So the takeovers had everything to do with the bond money. It's the biggest pot of money in the state of Michigan, and it was just too tempting for the state government to allow a black city like Detroit to have that kind of money that it would be in charge of. So they took over the bond money. The first board that was in place during that takeover, they passed the bond. We were able to get the bond passed, and the people voted for it, and it's up to the board. It's up to the elected body to put the issue up on the ballot. When they did that and they got taken over, the bond did pass, but they were not given the money by Lansing, by the state treasury, to spend to make the schools go. This is how the trick of privatization has really been perfected here, because the money was there, but the state treasury wouldn't release it. So people were really angry because there was all this money that got passed and there's no changes happening. And the school board was hapless to make any changes. We don't have the power over the state. We just don't have that kind of power. So, you know, to be able to make the changes that were necessary, they just didn't allow us any governance. I don't know how to express strongly enough that black people in the state of Michigan, in every city, have no authority over their own resources. In every black city. Pontiac had an emergency manager. The EM left, but they put a managing committee over it, just like what they're doing here today. The EM will be leaving, but it's not the elected board that got authority. They don't return to governance like they had before. They get instead this basic coalition or committee that has all the authority of making the expenditures. So really, what this coalition is an emergency manager in drag. In every city that this has happened to, not one city has returned to governance. Saginaw is heading this way. That's, you know, about 2 hours north of us. Pontiac, Flint, Benton Harbor, Muskegon Heights, Inkster lost their schools altogether. Romulus and Inkster don't even have schools anymore. They don't have a district anymore. They have all charters. Those are the black cities. So basically, what's really needs to be understood is that only white districts are allowed public schools with elected governance.
How is this being resisted? How is this being confronted and questioned on the legal
level? It's very, very hard. Legally, it's not being, well, we have a case in the federal courts right now. But there's still one pending. The schools were taken over first and then later the city under the bankruptcy. The schools have not filed for bankruptcy. The school district is not in bankruptcy. But the city, which also was not in bankruptcy, and the city did not file for bankruptcy, the law firm did. So the emergency manager's law firm, Jones Day Law Firm, filed for bankruptcy. The judge, in the federal judge, Judge Rhodes, would not allow the school board's cases to go forward until after the bankruptcy was finished. Because if we were able to show that Public Act 436 was unconstitutional, then it would pull all of the underpinnings out of the bankruptcy, and the banks wouldn't be able to take all our money. So they held it, they just held it off. So we have completely justice deferred. Because we weren't able to get our case into court, which was a completely clear case of voting rights violations. We weren't able to get it into court because they wanted to get the bankruptcy out of the way first. So if you take all the money first and it's all gone, then, you know, what happens? What difference does it make whether your rights were violated when it's finally proven? There's nothing to recoup.
How many schools so far have been closed in the last couple of years?
Over 100 schools have been closed. We only have, I should look at these numbers before I tell you off the top of my head because every day it's changing. there's less than half of the schools left than we had when they took over the schools in 2009, and there had been a massive closing prior to that.
I'm hoping that people are understanding, I mean, the enormity of what's happening here. We are witnessing, and this is why I've been talking so much about Detroit. This is the emptying of a city by design, by deliberate effort. And we are seeing an unrelenting attack, and it is targeted at black children, at Latino children, and the poor across the board. And we find no response at the federal level, really, except that the federal judge pretty much signed off on what the corporations wanted to achieve and governor wanted to achieve. And now we see that having been done, the governor is now moving to phase two, and with the cooperation of people who look like the people in Detroit. So there is an element of trust that, well, you know, it's diversity. You know, they're doing the right thing. Look at all these black and Latino faces up there. They're doing the right thing by the people, and of course, it's not happening that way. Well, Elena, the report comes out this afternoon. I'd like, you know, to come back to this conversation after you've had a chance to peruse what it says and to discuss at length, at greater length, the implications for not just Detroit, because I keep saying Detroit is a template for what's to come in many other cities.
They're talking about another 60,000 foreclosures. There's going to be another 60,000 foreclosures in the immediate future. So that there's a big move this week to fight the foreclosures, and people are talking about putting people back in their homes. So there actually is some really strong resistance coming, thanks to the mini groups, Moratorium Now, and the Detroit Eviction Defense. All of those groups are really coming together and fighting some of these things. And, you know, we know that Snyder wants to run for the president of the U.S., and we know that there is a big move to go back to Jim Crow. There's a huge swing of the pendulum to go back to Jim Crow, and a lot of his credentials are to be able to have stripped all the black cities of their voting rights in the state of Michigan, in the home of the UAW, in the home of Colonial. These are the places where we've completely been set back. There's so many things to tell you about, and I deal on a very grassroots level. I'm not at the top, I'm at the very bottom. So the level where I am is, you know, accompanying people to immigration who just got detained, or, you know, talking to people in the neighborhoods about getting their kids a special needs services that they've been denied. So I'm a very basic grassroots advocate. I'm not on the big policy level. The highest I've ever gone is the uncompensated school board in exile. I don't intend to ever go any further than that. But it's just to see it on the ground, to see the kinds of things that happen on the ground, especially with the terrible, terrible tragedy of those children who were found in the freezer of their mother's home, only because finally she was being evicted. That's the only reason those kids were discovered. That's how badly things have broken down here. No school looked for those kids. No social worker looked for those kids, because all of those structures have been cut back to bare-bone staffing, and there's nobody looking out for the most vulnerable people here. So mental illness is rampant. It's a very, very sad and difficult time here, and I know I sound really apocalyptic, but I want you to know also that there is great resistance and people are fighting, and we're not about to lose our humanity.
We'll definitely pick up the subject again. I just wanted to be able to have an opportunity to figure out what this report says, what the recommendations are, and we'll come back to this subject very, very, very shortly. Thank you so much,
okay.
Elena, for being thank with
you.
Us today.
Thank you
As
very
always,
much. Okay. All
a,
right.
A great pleasure to have you. Thanks.
Thank you. All right.
Well,
okay.
Thank you. All right. Bye-bye. We go back now to the studio, where a very familiar voice is available. Is that voice available?
Yes, it is. Hi, you, Trace.
Hi, Gary. Well,
I understand you're traveling
today. Fine, thank you.
Well, what we want to do today is take a few moments to raise money for Progressive Raider Network. We're moving into new studios, state-of-the-art digital studios, and we're wanting all of our producers, our hosts, to have Comrex or ISDNs. That will cost about $3,000 per host. We have 100 hosts. That's $300,000. But it will give us the best possible sounding quality, and so we wanted to offer something that would inspire people in your audience to pick up the phone and call, and also to benefit them. I have been working on these two particular products for a long time. They're brand new. In fact, just today, they're arriving at our office for the first time. One is for men, one is for women. One is called men's stuff, the other is called women's stuff. And as you know, I want to make products that make a difference in a person's body. They have to meet my standards. They have to be vegan. They have to be kosher. They have to come from wholesome foods and herbs. And so what I did is I looked at, after doing several specials for PBS stations, including Reboot Your Brain and How to Live Forever and Women's Health Solutions, I looked at all the issues facing men and women, generally over the age of 40. And I ask, what can we do, since the likelihood of having a complete change, doing everything right, is going to be relegated to probably only 5% of the people who have a need? Meaning if 100 people showed up, five of those would do everything necessary to make it happen. But the rest wouldn't. They would do bits and pieces. This is also true in my own family, where I would take my mom the latest vitamins that I knew she needed, and she would never open them. I would take her my latest book, and it would be there on the shelf. And she'd say, see, it's on the shelf. Everybody comes here. But Mom, a book is supposed to be read. She said, I know, but I haven't got around to it. And that was 5 years after I gave it to her. Of course, she wouldn't stop her smoking or social drinking or eating the wrong foods and not exercising. And of course, and unfortunately, she died at 58. My father also, 2 years before, died at 58. And I don't believe they died because of their cancer in the case of my father and a heart attack in the middle of the night in the case of my mother. I believe they do died because of their belief systems. They were so connected with their belief system that told them, now, don't go rushing at anything. Now, don't make any too major changes. But if your lifestyle is so toxic, you better make major changes because you're not going to get out of the way in time. It's like standing on a railroad track on a call on the cell phone, and you put your hand up as the train's barreling down and say, I want to finish my call first before I get off the track. It isn't going to happen, and you're going to get hit. So I thought, what can I do? Knowing human nature's lack of wanting to change, knowing that human nature does not change quickly. We all want change, by the way, but we don't want to be the change that we want. We want someone else to change for us or give us some magic pill that doesn't exist. So knowing what I'm dealing with, people who are in crisis, people who have problems, men and women, unique for women, and all the women in the audience know what problems you have after the age of 40 and every decade thereafter. And every man listening knows the problems you have every decade thereafter. So I took a long time. I looked all over the world at what are they doing in other societies. And then I decided I would create something based upon the input that I received back. And now, after all these decades, I've created the men's stuff and the women's stuff, two unique, distinguished products. And
what does the men's stuff do, and what does the women's stuff do?
Okay, now see, I can't tell you what it does because that would be making a claim.
Ah.
And if the moment you make a claim, then suddenly you're making a claim, and the FDA and FTC won't allow you to do that. So all I can tell you is what I use in them. For example, in the men's stuff, my number one ingredient is Muaira Puama. Muirapuama, an extract. Tribulus is the second one, tribulus. Now, you could Google tribulus. You could Google Shisandra, maca root. Maca, M-A-C-A root, is one of the most famous roots all over South America. You go to the Peru, you go to the Andes, you ask about maca root, and every man smiles, you know, and you bet they smile, and for good reason, because you're using maca root. And then ginkgo biloba, and longjack, and nettle roof, and yohimbe extract, and ashwagandha, and horny goat weed. Go to Italy and ask about horny goat weed. It's legendary in the Mediterranean. And your Eleutherococcus extract, Panax ginseng, apple, GMO-free soy lecithin, bananas, cacao, which is pure dark chocolate, oat beta-glucan, and Damiana leaves. Now, that's what's in the men's product. Now, you take any one of those are superstars. But I've got all the Elvises of history as far as men in one product. And it comes as a delicious-tasting chocolate. You take one scoop and in the morning, and your whole body benefits. What it specifically does, what each one of these do, you can go up and Google, and you'll see, for example, just Google maca, M-A-C-A root, and you'll see why all the men who can get it in South America take it every day. And so that's my men's stuff. It's a unique blend for men over the age of 40. And then for women, the number one ingredient is probably the most commonly used herb in the world, Dong Quai, D-O-N-G-Q-U-A-I. And I've got it at a 10-to-1 extract, which means it's really powerful. It's vegan, it's kosher. Then maca root, nettle root, wild yam extract. You know all the research on wild yam extract. Ashwagandha extract, flax seeds, soy isoflavones, sweet potato, blueberries, kale, cacao, broccoli, apple, banana, and oat bran. and sweetened with stevia. It tastes like a chocolate malt. It comes in this wonderful container. You take one scoop in the morning, and for all the things that a woman would want to have happen in her body over the age of 40, this is helping that process. So I can't get every woman to be in a women's health study that I just finished, for example, and see the amazing results where they change all their diet, they exercise every day, and they take all these supplements and they de-stress. But rather, I look at what is doable, what is possible, where a person can start. Maybe the circumstances in their life don't provide them with all the changes capable of being made all at once. Maybe it might take a year for them to make the changes they need to make. But at least now they have something that will help them in the interim. Something will help them. My goodness, if I can feel this way from this, maybe I should pay more attention to other things I'm doing and make better selections. So that's what it is. So I've got a product for men, men's stuff, a product for women, women's stuff, brand new, never before offered before, and at a very, very reasonable price. And I'll give the number 646-926-5422, 646-926-5422. And if that line is busy, I have 800-240-1494, 800-240-1494. So that's the...
I just want to ask you, Gary, for just a minute, really, you've described the product and so forth, but could you describe what PRN recently has been through and how it is that you are making available these products as a way of raising the funds that would restore the technological integrity of PRN?
Okay, well, PRN, by the way, reached a milestone just 6 weeks ago. In 1 week, we hit 26 million visits in 7 days. So we're dwarfing a whole competition. If you Google us up there and you see the analytics, we're number one as the most progressive radio station in the world, number one listened to. We post the most articles. We do more articles each day than Al Jazeera, the BBC, and Huffington Post combined. My Facebook has hundreds of articles per day. I think we have over 57,000 articles. We have calls to actions, films. So we're the go-to place for people who want to read articles that are from a progressive point of view, not propagandized from a left or right, conservative or liberal. We're looking for the truth wherever it is. Our hosts on our air, we're now up to 100. We have 15 new hosts. And on themes like the newest show is the Wise Women Show. It's just a very, very smart woman who is worldly and who's going to talk about any issue with women. And we have a new show for young people between the ages of 18 and 35 with all the issues that they're confronted with. We have a host who can answer those questions and guide them. So we select our hosts based upon not their ideology, but rather upon their ideals and how it can coincide with others and help them. And that's why the shows keep growing. Now, we were hacked by some outside source, and they took us off the air for about 4 hours and destroyed a lot of what we had created, but we immediately brought an IT team in, and we created even a better site. The whole full site goes up this Friday. I'm previewing it tonight. We've had people working nonstop on it. Thousands upon thousands of dollars spent to make sure that we get a site that is even, we even brought in someone to give us different locks that prevent them from down, taking us down again. But when you take on as many important issues as we do, when you're helping lead the anti-fracking movement, the anti-nuclear movement, the anti-GMO movement, when you're leading the health movement, and when you're going up against the FDA and the USDA and all the other giants because of their incompetency and big agra and big pharma and big medicine, you can expect a pushback. I'm not angry. I'm not upset. It's just what is going to be expected. If I go do a debate with someone from big pharma on the safety and efficacy of vaccines, I'm expecting that person to attack me personally, kill the messenger, so no one wants to believe in the message. I've done this my whole career. I've been an activist for my whole career. But no matter what happens, we just keep going forward. We just keep getting more people coming to us. We even have how many people per country. We had 66,000 people listening from India alone. So that's why our message has to be universal, because we have people tuning in from all over the world. From over 167 countries, they listen every day. You ought to see how much email we get. It's just mind-boggling, the amount. So now we'll have a state-of-the-art studio, double studio, which we have in New York City. But now we find that more people want to do these programs from their home. So from their home, we need to have state-of-the-art equipment. And as I'm broadcasting on now, and that means an ISDN or a Comrex unit, those start at about $2,000 each and go up. So that's why I say we're looking at about $200,000 to $300,000 that it will cost us just to give better clarity on the programs that we are doing. And we also have brought in a person who is going to be promoting every program. So every single host will have a whole effort on their behalf to put the information out there about what they're doing. Then it's for the audience to decide, do they like the program or not like the program? And if they like it, they'll stick with it. If they don't, they'll stop listening, and we get the real numbers every single day. And then we want our host to also honor their audience. We just had the passing of Danny Schechter last week. He'd been on PRN for 8 years and built up quite an audience. But Danny always came prepared, always did good shows, and had interesting guests. And so he left a vacuum. You know, we're going to have to fill that. But fortunately, we have such depth of people wanting to get on the air now. You have no idea how many calls we get from people who never would have spoken with us in the past. Because when you're just starting, as we did 13 years ago, people say, well, when you get up and running and you have an audience, let me know. Well, now we are the audience. You know, we have the audience. We have the audience that no one else has. At the same time, you're looking at Pacifica. They're ranked so low now that they're the least rated show in the entire New York City area. They have hundreds per hour in prime time. And you know, as a former program director of Pacifica National and as a station manager at WBAI, you can't start a day with couple hundred people listening in prime time. That has to be an anchor. But that's because of poor programming and people who should have been said goodbye to a long time ago, and poor management and all the other, and not honoring premiums, all the other things that you and the audience are fully aware of. So when you do it right, you can build an audience. When you do it wrong, you destroy an audience. It's that simple. So right now we're building an audience.
These products that you have developed as part, it's a gift for the gift of support to PRN. You're saying we're not just asking you for the money, and we do need it. We're saying thank you with something that could help you as well. So it is a gift for a gift, and we're asking that people, in a sense, take ownership of this medium that is available to them. I know from the reactions I get from the audience listening to lead stories, they tell me all the time how important the program is to them and how it has become a necessary reference point for them. Just listening to, we were able to restart our Free Your Mind Friday forums, and the overwhelming reaction was, oh, great, it is so great to reconnect, both on my end and on theirs. So we miss each other. We have formed a community. And what a community does is that it supports. It supports the thing that supports them. And so we're asking for your support. And we're saying thank you with a gift to your help. So could you tell the number again and just again briefly describe these products that will make available to those people who are supporting the station?
Sure. The one product is called Men's Stuff. Now, just imagine if you're a man over the age of 40, 50, 60, 70. What's going on in your life? What's going on in your body? What do you see when you look in the mirror? What do you feel when you get in bed at night? I want to address all the issues I can that are humanly possible with one delicious, tasty product. Men's Stuff does it. I don't know of anything else in the world that a man could take that would do as much for them as Muarapuama. tribulus, schisandra, maca root, ginkgo, long jack. I'll bet no one in the audience ever heard of long jack, and I have it 101 in here. Nettle root extract, yohimbe. Now, yes, yohimbe is very famous all over the world for men, as is horny goatweed all over Europe, and Eleutherococcus all over the Orient. In fact, it was prized that only the emperors could use it for a long period of time. And Panax ginseng and cocao and opetoglucan and Damiana is very famous, too, throughout the Mediterranean. But it's all in here. It's delicious. It's phenomenal. For women, I have the number one used herb in the world that I'm aware of for women, Dong Quai, in a 10-to-1 extract, which is very powerful. But also maca root, because women in South America, they pride themselves. Everyone is taught about what really helps them, and it does. And nettle root. And then you've seen all the studies on wild yam extract and ashwagandha extract and flaxseed and soya flavones and sweet potato and blueberries and kale and cacao and broccoli and apple, banana, oat bran, and sweetened with stevia. That's what's in there. These are two wonderful. They taste like a chocolate malt. They are kosher. They are vegan. They are the highest quality, most potent, and things you could possibly do for women and men. And that's it. I can't make claims. If I made claims, we would have all the money we needed in about 25 minutes. And all the money, every penny, goes to Progressive Radio Network. So that's it. Call 646-926-5422. 646-926-5422. If that should be busy, call 1-800-240-1494. 1-800-240-1494. I'll let you get back to finish up your program. Thanks a lot, Eutrice. Have a nice day.
Thank you, Gary. Thanks a lot for the visit. I have a couple of minutes, and I want to talk about the two things we talked about today. First of all, the situation in Detroit, certainly I'm following it. It is important to pay attention to it. And the stories that we are hearing coming out of Detroit are so alarming, they almost sound untrue. You couldn't believe that in a couple of years, more than half of the schools in Detroit have been shut down. And yet, we're told that, you know, it's about progress. Detroit is moving ahead. And under this governor, Rick Snyder, we've had an unnecessary bankruptcy, a forced bankruptcy. We've had the systematic emptying of a city. You just heard Elena talk about 60,000 more foreclosures. It's almost unimaginable that this is happening in real time. What's worse is that Detroit is a template for what is about to happen in other major cities, especially cities, they call them urban centers now, where you have large African-American and Latino communities. I'm talking about New York City. I'm talking about Philadelphia, Baltimore. These are the cities, and you'll see more and more of them added to the list, where the template, once perfected, it would be automatic. You just empty the city, drive out the poor and the local residents, make it very, very hard for them to stay there, redesign the city for so-called desirable new citizens and residents. And what you would have done is you would have basically ethnically cleansed entire cities. That is about to happen. And that is why we talk so much about Detroit, because all of the signs, if you were to take a look at this subject, let's say 10 years ago, you couldn't believe that it would get to this in such a short time, but it has, and it's going to get worse. And there are symptoms of this all over the country. And that's why we pay attention to this. But we also have to remember that it's not going down without a fight. People like Elena Herrada and others who have been engaged. They certainly are in an uphill climb, but they have committed themselves to climbing. And if it weren't for people like that in these small pockets conducting a resistance, it would be an overwhelming slam dunk for the state in carrying out its nefarious plans. So we have to take a look at that. The second is, and I too will be joining in this fundraising effort, because as you heard Gary say, that the equipment upgrades are now absolutely necessary. And in order to do that, we have to have some funds. And so I'll be coming to you asking for your support. PRN is a necessary reference point for millions of people now, and it is important that we take responsibility for those avenues of information that help us make sense of the world that we live in. So I'm asking again for today, 646-926-5422, 646-926-5422. And if that is busy, 800-240-1494. Those are the numbers that you call to get the gifts that you will get for your gift of support to PRN. So those 2 points today, I hope that, you know, they somehow motivate you to become an activist yourself. In the sense of, with respect to Detroit, an activist in the sense that the work is right there in your community. You don't have to go anywhere to look at it. The work is right there in your community, and you should become involved. And with respect to PRN, you take a bit of responsibility for keeping those things that support you and that feed your mind. These are really good things. You know, it's very important that you stand up when it's a time to stand up. And so we appreciate that. We are trying to grow and we're trying to recoup and whatnot. But as Gary said, we are moving forward, but we need you to help as well. So PRN hasn't done a major fundraiser, really. Certainly not since I'm on board. I don't remember PRN doing any major fundraiser. But the fact that it is doing it now means that it is important and vital to the continued existence of the radio station. And so I'm asking that you participate by supporting. Thanks a lot, and it's a pleasure and privilege to be in your company. More again tomorrow. Take care.